Ah, the first full day of summer. Bring it on. I love it. It's Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell, a.k.a. Squeaky. You know I'm speaking too much when I sound like a frog giving out here. Too many talks. A few minutes after 11 o'clock on a beautiful, beautiful Thursday morning right here in New York City. Got a great show coming your way. You've heard of Breanne Rice. Breanne Rice revealed to the world her autoimmune disease about a year ago. Really brave soul. A model, TV personality. She's done it all. And most importantly, she exposed herself. She bare it all to show everyone, the world, her true identity, her true face. We all wear a mask every day, but Breanne was wearing a different one, a physical one that allowed her to continue as a model. But really, it was a lie that she was living for years and she couldn't take it anymore. We're going to meet this incredible professional, just trailblazer in a few minutes. Breanne Rice coming your way. We're going to be talking about Happy Fest, which happened last week. Friends of the show here, which was a great, great, extremely successful obstacle course, accessible obstacle course for everybody. Tell you about that, how much fun that was. We're going to be talking about a new trend. You're not going to believe this. A new trend that, you can't explain it. It's just too weird to be true. Then again, you know, the era that we live in nowadays, I mean, not much kind of fazed you, but this one actually fazed me because I'm like, no, this has to be fake news. But it's not fake news. It's real news. Of course, we welcome your phone calls at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Anyway, so read a little alarming fact the other day. Only 17% of schools in New York City are accessible for physical disabilities. So if you have a disability where using canes, a scooter, or a wheelchair, only 17% of the schools are accessible for you. I mean, that's really, really a low number. So you have narrow hallways you're dealing with, and you're dealing with a situation where, you know, students aren't able to access entire parts of schools. So imagine, you know, thinking back in whether you're in college or in high school or grammar school, and they're like, okay, well, this class is going to be held over in Building B. But you can't get to Building B because there's not a ramp or there's not an elevator. So it's very, very limiting and against the law as well. But I imagine these buildings are so old, they're not ADA compliant. They don't have to be. But the mayor's administration has rolled out something. I forget the number. It's almost in the low. Trying to remember, is it $100 million? Something like that. In the next 5 years, they're going to make more of the 17% schools in New York City more accessible. I mean, that's really, really something. That's a daunting task. I mean, there are students that I was reading about that really are just afraid and intimidated and angry about their situation. I mean, think about this. I mean, some of these kids I was reading about are really, really well-read, well-spoken, and they're just really pissed off. And who could blame them? Because they have a right, just like anyone else, to get an education. And what's standing in their way? Well, the front door is standing in their way because there's no ramp. There's no elevator. So they have to go in. Many students have to go into the side door or the back door. I mean, they're treated like second-class citizens. I mean, my heart breaks for them. There's one family I was reading about where even though a scooter is easily permittable, or I should say easily obtainable, you can get it on a school bus rather easily, they will not permit it. The Board of Ed will not permit it, and or the transportation company. They say it's too much of a hazard, so they have to sign up for a special education bus. Now, one particular student who lives not that far away from his school, I think it's about 5 miles away, said it could take up to 3 hours on a special education bus to get to school. 3 hours. So, sitting on that bus for 3 hours or close to, he has missed weeks of school. Even though he's not actually missing school because he's not being tardy or not being absent, he's actually just wasting away on that bus. Inconceivable, right? So the parents I just mentioned to you with their child who has a scooter that's not permitted actually on the bus said, well, you know what, the heck with that. We want our daughter to be with able-bodied students, the mainstream of the student body. So they bought two scooters, I guess one for her to get to the bus stop. And I guess she's ambulatory enough to get on the bus, maybe it's crutches at that point. And then when she gets to school, they bought her another scooter. I don't know, maybe a teacher brings it out or an aide, but you know they didn't get the specifics. But there's another school waiting for her, another scooter on the other side where she gets to school. So that's how parents are, you know, those are just the very few stories that I read about. But it's really, really disenchanting. I mean, a city of this magnitude, you know, the capital of the world, New York City, with more money than, you know, the mint. And that's what we're dealing with, these deplorable conditions. I mean, you know, it's really going to impact their academic performance or social performance. What about after school clubs? What about sports? And listen to this. This really broke my heart. Whoa, man, you can relate to this. Okay, here we go. I'm taking you back. Remember lunchtime in school. Think about high school. All right, who are you going to sit with? Who do you want to avoid? And for me back then, it was who can I find? Because being visually impaired, having to like pinpoint a sea of people because we never sat in the same spot, or I certainly didn't have a lot of friends back then. I just was kind of a nomad. I would roam and, hey, what's up? Hey, you know, John, Mary, hey, and hang out and take a seat. But so imagine those times, okay? You remember how kind of awkward they were. So you're in a wheelchair, and now there's nowhere for you to sit because the lunchroom tables have the built-in seats. So I guess there's only, well, maybe there's two ends for them to sit at, the two ends of the table, but they have to sit at the end of the table, I'm sure, and that makes them feel different. Another way they would are made to feel different because they can't enter most of the school, the majority of the schools, like every other student, through the front door. And now lunch, when they just want to kick back, you know, talk schoolwork or socialize and, you know, break some bread, now they have to sit at a table that has been made for them. So all the kids in wheelchairs or maybe scooters have to sit together. And, you know, is that the worst thing in the world? Possibly not. But you know what? You want to hang out with the people that you like. Just because they're in a wheelchair doesn't mean you want to sit next to them because you're in a wheelchair. That means like everyone who's black has to sit together. Everyone who's Indian or Caucasian or Hispanic. I mean, come on, it goes on and on. No, maybe you can identify with them, certainly, but that doesn't mean you want to hang out and have lunch with them every day of the week because the regular tables for the rest of the student body are accommodating for them. But no, you can't roll up to those tables. So that's really heartbreaking to hear students say something of that caliber because, you know what, I mean, even as little as lunchroom, and you know, students can be really, really relentless. So I'm sure that they get made fun of. And one student was saying that he just feels really, really inadequate rolling down the hallways because they are so narrow. And then that students just don't, aren't the most gracious and or polite. And I guess probably bump into him or just don't give him the right away when possibly, you know, maybe they don't see him. Who knows? I don't know the exact circumstance, but, you know, you can imagine that. Any hallway in America when the bells ring, it's like, you know, it's like a stampede by all means. And this is also comes at a very interesting time because I'm not exactly sure of the title. Again, pardon me about my voice today. It's really getting shot. De Blasio, he controls all the schools here in five boroughs. And at the end of the month, if it's not voted in that he does continue having the right to control, it goes to the governor. And you know that lovely relationship they have, the governor and the mayor. So what they're saying is we'll vote you back in. A lot of the parents in schools are saying we'll vote you back in or to keep your power, but we want more charter schools. Charter schools have more liberty of choosing their protocols, academic classes. What's the word I'm looking for? Anyway, the classes. Sorry, it's slipping my mind right now. But they are fully in charge and independent and have different funding as well. So they're a little bit more autonomous than a city school. So De Blasio gets this. That's what they're looking for. It's a little bit more autonomy, having chapter schools, charter schools. And then that'll work out well for them because charter schools typically test better. And hopefully, it didn't say in the article, hopefully charter schools are more ADA compliant. I would think so, but not necessarily so, because we, when we think of charter schools, we think of newer schools, which in essence they are, in a thematic way, but not in a physical way, because in New York City, obviously you can't afford to put up a new school, but just because, you know, maybe on the Upper East Side, a lot of rich parents got together and said, listen, let's start our own school. Great, great, great. Here's a board. Let's get this going. But they can't afford to obviously put up their own building. So they're going to either renovate an existing building or maybe merge with another school, and it's divided somehow. Not exactly sure, but that's the reality there. So, but I hope that 17% of schools that are accessible really, really grows by leaps and bounds in the next year or two, because, I mean, school's hard enough. I mean, think about all the things you have to go through, you know, just getting through school a day. And now if you have a disability, just the navigational aspect, going down the hallways, or, okay, I have to go to art class, but I can't go down that hallway because there's too much of a right angle, and the sea of people coming the opposite way is too difficult. So I need to go this way and, you know, double back and or wait, leave 5 minutes early from the class or go 5 minutes later. I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of, you know, tips or tricks they use to navigate their school campus. And that's kind of hard. But I imagine when they go to college, it's a much better situation, because typically colleges are much more solvent and can be more ADA compliant, and or typically out of the city area, urban atmospheres, invest much more in ADA compliance in terms of, I know when I was in school, it was different. I'm not in a wheelchair by all means, but in terms of signs and things of that nature, finding your way around campus for anybody being a freshman can be really daunting. Oh my God, you have to walk a half a mile over there, and it's the three buildings. You see those three buildings? Well, it's the five buildings behind us. Oh, okay. So that was pretty daunting for me. And obviously seeing the chalkboard in a gigantic auditorium where the lecture was, oh my God, I'm going to have to go have a cocktail just thinking about all these disturbing details. Well, we hope that this really gets turned over quickly. And for any student who has any mobility issues, we wish them all the luck. And also, if you know of anybody who's experiencing any issues, please give me an email or a call. Email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. It doesn't have to be in New York City. It can be in any school district or any part of the world. Obviously, that where PRN broadcasts, Progressive Radio Network, you can email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com, or certainly call it 888-874-4888. So, yeah, this is a weird one. Sit down. Okay, well, you've heard of monogamy. Yeah, of course. Well, that's probably what you're into or totally fearing in life. Kelsey, can I have some music, please? There's a new trend. This is called sologamy. And this is marriage by a person to oneself. Yes, I, Mark Farrell, to be my lawfully and wedded husband, to me, to hold and to love, to cherish in good times and bad times. And when I have morning breath and don't make my bed and all these other terrible traits I have, I will not leave you, Mark. I will love you. I will hold your other hand, whether it's a right hand holding the left or the left holding the right. I will do that. I will stand by you on your good days and bad days. So this is a new trend. A new trend. People are marrying themselves. This is the epitome of narcissism. What is wrong with our world? I kid you not. Now, typically, this trend is leading the way by feminists. I'm sure there are guys out there, but it was strictly, the story was on feminists and who have put their careers first and I guess decide not to have children, etc., and certainly have not found a mate, whatever the sex may be. And this is what they're, I guess, decide to do. So here's the deal. They actually have a white gown. I kid you not. They have a white gown. Invites go out. Okay, this is not maybe every sologamy wedding, but white gowns go out or worn. Invites go out. And friends and family come and see you wherever you are. Maybe it's in Vegas. Hey, let's go away for the weekend to see me get married to me. Are you having cold feet, Mark? Well, one of them is cold. I think I'll go through with it, though. I mean, Saturday Night Live should do a skit on this for sure, because, I mean, there's so much great material here. What is wrong with us? Why do you have to marry yourself? Are you just saying like F you to traditional values? I mean, so just don't get married. Why do you have to put yourself in a freak category? I mean, I just don't get it in any shape, way, or form. I just don't get it because also get this. It's legally binding. I'm sorry. It's legal, but non-binding. All right. So on a piece of paper or in a file somewhere in some hard drive somewhere is so-and-so married themselves. So where do you go on a honeymoon? Do you say to somebody, like when you go to a resort, oh, you're here on a honeymoon? Oh, great. I can't wait to meet your husband or wife. Oh, actually, you've just met them. I'm sorry. I don't follow. Did I miss them? Oh, no. I married myself. Oh, well, congratulations. Should we give you a gift or use a gift? Like, what's the proper protocol? Like, when you go to the wedding, can you RSVP for two? Are you invited as a couple? And, like, is there a head table? You know, because, you know, people get married. Sometimes it's very common to have a head table. Is there only one chair or are there two chairs? I mean, there's great material here. Sologamy. Salogomy. So you know what monogamy is. You know what polygamy is. Sure, a man with multiple wives, and there's been some great shows made about that. I did not know about this. Polyandry, women, and why not? If men can do it, women should be able to do it. Women who take more than one husband. You go, ladies. Why not, right? Men shouldn't guys have all the fun. People have all the fun. See how it is to have multiple husbands. We're not easy to deal with, so give it a whirl. Okay, here's another one. Polyamory, open relationship. I've always called it an open relationship. No, I'm not. It's not reflective of my marriage by all means, but polyamory. Amorly? I don't know. I can't read my writing. Open relationship. So, okay, let's put them in order here. Monogamy, I totally understand. Polyamory, yeah, open relationship. Then what would be the third weirdest? I guess polygamy and polyandry would be the third tie for third. And coming in fourth would be sologamy. Yes, let's just marry ourselves. So I don't know. Maybe is it the social media world that we live in? Because you know you see so many people and the same people over and over again posting, I think it's really sad, facts about themselves, things they've done, things they want to do, things they've tried to do. And we're talking about anything from their dinner that they just photographed on Instagram and put up on Facebook or LinkedIn, their inner thoughts and wishing everybody, hi, Facebook family, hoping your Monday's grand. Talk to you later. Have a great day. It's like, why? Why would you put that out there? I only use it for business opportunities, for my speaking business, and also to put great interviews like Insight on the Progressive Radio Network out there. But I don't broadcast any personal business at all. Once in a while, when I host events, I put that up there on Facebook and LinkedIn for people to see, obviously, the work that's being done in the world of mental health, alcohol and drugs, accessibility, overcoming adversity, things of that nature. The thing is, people don't realize how narcissistic they are. And that's part of the problem. And I think a lot of people are just really, really screaming and need attention. And that's why this is a great, great platform for them. So it would be interesting if I would have thought of this before, but maybe I can do a follow-up, a part two on the show here. If I would have posted, okay, who's into sologamy out there? But I don't know if I would be comfortable putting something like that out there because then I equate my name to sologamy. But it would be very interesting to see who would respond, what the hell is sologamy, and, hey, sign me up, or give me 2 weeks so I can buy a white gown. Or let's do invites, or evites, I should say, because, you know, if you're a sologamist, that even sounds freakier, a sologamist. Oh, my God. Yeah, it sounds like something you would order at the deli counter. I'll take a pound of I'm a sologamist. Yeah, I'll take a pound of the sologamy. It's next to a bologna because it's complete bullshit. Anyway, but that's just kind of really, really freaky. So in a few minutes, we're not going to talk about a sologamist. You're going to meet somebody who epitomizes courage, strength, and the willingness to teach others about overcoming adversity right after this. Yeah, the first full day of summer here in New York City. Doesn't it feel good? Wherever you are, I hope you are experiencing the same beautiful day that we are right here in New York in Midtown. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining me. And you've probably heard the name Breanne Rice before. I mean, she was famous before, but now, a year ago, from her makeup-free Instagram selfie, this is what catapulted her virally, that went total viral. She shared with the world her skin condition that she kept very, very private for years. Breanne is a TV and media personality currently starring in TLC's documentary series Too Ugly for Love, which is not the case for her by all means, and was a past contestant on the hit reality TV show The Bachelor on ABC, which I'm sure you saw, and she recently appeared on Dr. Phil's show as well as the Hallmark Channel's Home and Family, where she shows some great tips for staying healthy and being fit. She has also been published in numerous national articles and magazines such as Teen, Vogue, Cosmopolitan, and People, and it's my pleasure to welcome the very, very beautiful Breanne Rice. Hey, Breanne, how are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm doing awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Do you have a glimmer of sunshine in Seattle today?
I do. The sun came out, but I'm probably still deficient in vitamin D3.
So your autoimmune disease obviously prevents you from being in the sun because it's very, very dangerous for you. Vitiligo is even more dangerous when you're in the sun, correct?
Yeah, it raises my risk for skin cancer, and there's no pigmentation there, so I tend to burn every time I'm out in the sun on the areas that are lacking pigment, so I have to be extra careful.
So you've had a very, very interesting life. You became something that you've always dreamt of for years, a model, and you were living a life, fashion model, magazine, print, you name it, commercial. And then all of a sudden, one day, when you looked in the mirror and you saw those pretty eyes and smiling, staring right back at you, you saw something a little different. Explain that, please.
Yeah, so I have a natural olive skin tone. And when I looked in the mirror, I noticed that there was a white small spot underneath my left eye. It was about the size of a dime. And, you know, I was 19. I'm like, maybe it's a zit. It'll go away. You know, and I kind of brushed it off, but then it began expanding, and I started to lose the pigmentation on my face.
When you say expanding, Breanne, how much time elapsed?
I'm 32 now, so over a span of 10 years, I lost nearly half of the pigment on my face, and I have a little bit on my elbows and ears and things now, but within months, it began to rapidly spread on my face from the little white spot. And then it has kind of a mirroring effect. So it placed these circles around my eyes and then spread down my cheeks, then to the top of my lip, my forehead, and my chin.
When you first saw the onset, were you like, oh, this is kind of weird. It's not a big deal. I'm sure it's going to go away. A little makeup, no big deal. Move on.
Absolutely. I thought it was just something that, you know, would come and go, or it was like, maybe I'll just grow out of it. But the reality is that my immune system was seeing my skin cells and saying, nope, see you later. And it began to spread, and I'd have to cover it up with makeup.
And basically, the body starts attacking itself, the pigment cells, correct?
Yes. Yeah, the cells that make pigmentation, your immune system, for whatever reason, says this isn't right, and it begins to attack them. So, you know, it's very devastating to one's self-esteem. It's not life-threatening by any means. It's associated with a lot of other autoimmune conditions like thyroid disorder, things of that nature. But the vitiligo in itself is not life-threatening, but, I mean, it changes the look of your skin, your appearance. And some people, they're affected dramatically by it. It can cover their entire body. And the darker your skin tone, the more the contrast. So it's more noticeable. I mean, someone like myself or more olive complected or darker, it's going to show up more because of the contrast.
Well, when there's 200,000 cases annually in the States, that's fairly significant. Is this hereditary? Do you know?
It's not hereditary, but it can happen essentially to anyone at any time. They're doing more research on it. But I believe that the health of the immune system begins with a healthy digestive tract. And for me, I had a lot of GI issues prior. I was diagnosed with food allergies, and I was constantly inflamed. So that kind of started first. And then the vitiligo happened after all of those symptoms. So I think that there is a direct correlation between those two for me personally. And unfortunately, it's starting to affect more and more people.
So with that condition, you had vitiligo, and then did that prepare you by any means? It's very interesting, the contrast, because you had a lot of digestive tract issues, and you were chronically ill for a while. When did that start?
That started actually, when I was in my teens.
Okay.
I had a lot of stomach issues. And then
not fun.
No, it was not fun at all. And it kept progressing and progressing. And then I felt like every time I was eating something, I was getting sick. And, you know, we won't go into the TMI details.
Yeah.
I still want to maintain my girlish appearance here.
So but, here you are as an early... Sorry to cut you off there, Brianna. So
yeah.
Here you are as a teenager, obviously with all the teenager angst that you have in everyday life, you know. And then you're dealing with... digestive tract chronic issues or chronically ill for many, many years, and then think you're maybe getting over the hump, and then here you, and that's an internal, okay, nobody could see
right.
That obviously you're maybe not happy some days, certainly couldn't participate in maybe some social things or maybe school sometimes, but then here you are years later, this is something that's actually on the exterior, Brianna Rice.
Yeah.
Was there any way that you think all those years of being chronically ill prepared you for what was next?
I think that things happen to people, and it's how you respond to those situations. And I'm a very faith-oriented person, and I just think that all the things that I've been through that have molded me and shaped me into the person that I am now have prepared me for greater things. And, now looking back, I wouldn't change a thing.
And also the fact that you were well prepared and educated in the digestive areas, so you knew what worked for your body after a while and what didn't. So the fact that you could change your diet with the vitiligo that actually brought down the swelling, correct?
Yeah, it did.
Inflammation?
Yes, the inflammation, avoiding the foods I was allergic to, working on, giving my body nutrients to support a healthy digestive tract, and so also being able to digest and absorb those nutrients, feeding my body foods that helped with free radical damage and with skin. So, and vitamin D3 is huge, especially for individuals with vitiligo, because we primarily get that from the sun, right? Well, if you're lacking pigment, the more pigment that you're lacking, your body can't absorb that. So that was a huge thing for me, was having adequate vitamin D3 levels. And also, people who tend to have autoimmune issues are severely deficient in vitamin D3. They've done several studies on that. So that's a big thing, especially for me. I'm a Seattle girl. I've lived in the Pacific Northwest my entire life. And the rumors are true. We don't get a whole lot of sunshine. It comes and goes. So I have all those contributing things.
So it's a good place. You have that in your favor.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So right before you became a model, you were a cosmetologist. And that's something that actually, it's pretty funny because it's another thing that prepared you for what was inevitable.
I know.
Yeah. So you were very good at makeup. And so you started to make a very, very good compound or base. I don't have the terminology.
I worked for a large cosmetic company as well. And I did a lot of hair and makeup. I was doing stuff for fashion shows. And they're like, hey, girl, you're really pretty. Why don't you model for us? But so I got really good at doing my makeup. And that was prior to the vitiligo taking place. So I considered myself a pro, an expert on it. And then when it happened, I was fully prepared for applying my makeup, which could take up to 45 minutes at a time. And
wow.
I wouldn't go outside without any makeup on. I was so insecure and people would stare at me. So, it's kind of funny how that all came into play as well.
Breanne Rice, tell me about when the first symptom occurred. How much time elapsed before? Was it a week, a month, or 2 months where you figured, uh-oh, this could be really detrimental to my modeling career?
Within about 3 months, because the spot grew in size and I was under a lot of stress right at that moment. And I went to the doctor and he's like, I'm so sorry, but you have vitiligo. You know, there's no cure for it. And, you know, he educated me on what the disease did. And, you know, at that time as well, there wasn't really a lot of people out in the public who had it or who had come forward with it. We have amazing role models like Winnie Harlow, who has it, and several people now that, you know, okay, that's what that is, right? And they've talked about the disease, and there's more information now. But back then, you know, Michael Jackson was the only person who had been out in the public with it. So I was researching it, and there wasn't the same technology. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Am I going to lose all the pigment on my face? And I was completely devastated. And I thought, why did this have to happen to me? What the hell, right? Couldn't it be on the bottom of my foot or underneath my armpit?
Exactly.
Why did it have to be on my face? And I always wanted to be one of those girls that could just throw her hair up in a ponytail and walk out and say, I woke up like this, you know, but I couldn't do that. It's like 45 minutes, you know, and then if you're sweating and all of that, it was just a mess. And going to the gym, and it became overwhelming, and it consumed my thoughts. It consumed my mind. I didn't feel good enough. I didn't feel that I compared. I was measuring myself to this unrealistic standard of perfection. And it was, you know, not a good time for me in my life.
When you were diagnosed, did you tell your parents?
I did. Yeah. My parents were the only people that knew. I didn't tell any men for sure. Nobody really knew about it, but my family.
So you weren't in a serious relationship back then?
No, I have been married prior, but no, not when I was, you know, in my early 20s, no.
So that's a really hard and big, deep secret to keep, because here you are. I mean, this is your profession. This is your life. This is everything anybody is your face. You can't really do much, of course, you know, surgery. And we're not talking about plastic surgery or anything, but I mean, this is the core of who you are. I mean, we're born this way. I mean, besides, you know, some certain things we can do. I mean, this is who we are. And for a model, and especially for a woman, and I don't mean this in a sexist way by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, guys can a little bit roll with the punches a little bit more because, hey, I'm a guy, whatever, I can deal with it. I don't have to worry about, you know, being perceived as a beautiful person, as women are, because obviously because our societal pressures and norms, and that's what we're accustomed to. But here you are in a world of modeling where everything is about appearance, and you have to keep this biggest secret in the world between yourself and your parents. And I can't imagine the toll that must have taken.
It did. And at that time in my life, I found my value and my identity and my self-worth in what I look like. You know, so when that happened to me, I felt like I lost that. And that was my identity. And I was like, well, what am I going to do now, right? And it was devastating. And looking at what the thoughts that I was thinking about myself back then and just all of that, things didn't really start to change in my life until I changed my mindset. And I literally woke up and I said, you know what? I don't want to feel this way about myself anymore. I don't. I want to wake up and feel beautiful and confident in my own skin, as everyone should, and everyone deserves that, no matter what you look like, no matter what you weigh, no matter the color of your skin, who you are. You should feel beautiful and confident in your own skin.
Absolutely.
And so for me, I had to let go of all those things, all those, you know, lies that I was telling myself that I couldn't, you know. And I always saw myself speaking to other women and being in the media as well. And in order to do that, I had to let those things go. And I had to believe, okay, I am beautiful. I am confident. This is who I'm created to be. And I wanted my situation to help empower other women to love themselves and feel comfortable and confident in who they are.
You know, for over 10 years, going back to my initial point, it's extremely hard to just not be real. And I can't imagine how it is to, hang on here for the analogy, to be in a closet, okay? To not be, it's the same thing. I mean, you look at somebody, you know, for all intents and purposes, you don't know their sexual identity, their preference. And for the same thing, people go a lifetime. And that's a personal choice. Again, it's not certainly a disease, an autoimmune disease. But here you are. I can't imagine being, say, 8 years into this, out of your 12 years, and being on like a 12-hour photo shoot, and probably the last thing in your mind was to go out and have a good time. You just wanted to go home and take off this makeup so you can just be who you are.
Yeah, I would show up to shoots with makeup already on, foundation on. Sometimes I would call makeup artists ahead of time and I would say, hey, I'm going to come with my own foundation, or I would have them turn me away.
Would they question you why?
Yeah, they were like, why? You know, they thought I was like really insecure, which I was. But I would be like, you know, I have vitiligo, and then sometimes I wouldn't cover it properly for certain photo shoots, and it would be more noticeable. And I would get comments like, what happened to your face? Or they would think that I applied my concealer off because it has rigid edges on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to use different tones to tone out the, you know,
kind of
blending
blend
and all that. Yeah. So it was just a lot. It was very, very stressful. And, you know, I got out of it because it just wasn't healthy for me. I wasn't healthy. I didn't have a healthy self-esteem, and I had to learn to love myself and discover my purpose, essentially. And when I did that, that's when all of these things started happening. It's kind of funny because now, going through all of that, it's kind of catapulted me into my purpose. Right. And it is in that type of an industry, doing TV and media and all those things now, but it's from going through my own personal journey.
And a whole different approach.
Right. Not being perfect or measuring myself to this unrealistic standard of perfection. It's me being me and getting my story out there, and it's powerful. And I think so many of us have been through things, and when we really share what we've been through and they see you coming out of it on the other side, they look at you and they're inspired, and they say, if he can do it, I can do it. If she can
so
do
true.
It, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I get so many emails and messages, and it's every single one of them I read, and it melts my heart. And I'm like, this is why I do what I do every single day. You know, it's reached people all over the world. So it's, I'm so glad that I came forward with it and let it go.
Absolutely. Well, I commend you. So Brianne Rice,
so
you had conveyed to certain people that you had vitiligo.
Yes. Some of the makeup artists, I would tell them.
On a down low, sort of?
Yeah. I would say, hey, I have vitiligo, and I would come to the photo shoot with foundation on because I didn't want to show up and then other models to see me.
Sure.
And I felt inadequate. It was like, oh, I got to take all this extra time, and I didn't want people to see what I look like. And then, okay, I'm perfectly made up. And then I look like I have normal skin after all this work, right? Like, I wanted to have the appearance that I had normal skin like everyone else on my face. And now it was very secretive when I would tell people about it. Yeah, I remember this one photo shoot I did for a magazine, and they had a camera crew there that were filming, and she was a local fashion designer, and she was kind of making it big, and they're filming behind the scenes, and I had the makeup artist turn me away from the camera, and she was wiping off some of my makeup, and I didn't want that to be seen on television, that I had patches on my skin. And I was like, can we turn me the other way, please? So, I mean, there were several times where I just didn't want anyone to know about it.
Yeah, it's awkward, you know, and it's disempowering when it shouldn't be, because that's just mm-hmm. who you are. That's who we are. Everyone has something of that caliber, whether it maybe not as apparent. You know, we have, as I say, we have invisible disabilities. My invisible disability is my vision. It's a permanent visual impairment, and people don't think mm-hmm. and also don't even consider, well, this guy looks young and able. Why is he pulling out a magnifier to read the menu? And I guess it doesn't hurt for me to say, what are you blind? So people just don't, but we shouldn't think less of ourselves. It takes time, just like anything else in life, to grow accustomed to who you are and how you are and really kind of loving yourself, or, you know, what you are or what you aren't, because that's it, man. If you just joined the show, the show is Insight. The radio network is the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. You're joining me right now is Breanne Rice. She's a TV and media personality, model, and nutritional therapy practitioner. And we're going to get to many of that aspect of your life in just a bit. But talk to me about The Bachelor. The big reveal came for you in July of 2016, almost a year ago. But let's get into The Bachelor, because I would think, wow, if you want to get out of modeling and kind of take a clandestine approach in life. But no, you went to TV.
Mm-hmm.
How was that decision made?
Well, I started out doing local television and doing nutrition segments. And talking about autoimmune stuff. And then, I did some modeling on camera, for fashion segments and things like that locally. And I always felt like that was my thing. Like I wanted to, you know, it's my ultimate goal to have my own show and things like that. I just saw myself doing that, and I'm kind of a go-getter. So
entrepreneurial spirit. I love it.
Yeah. So, you know, I started off that, and then, after I kind of made my local rounds, I was like, you know what? I want to be on national television. Like I want to see if I can do some segments or whatnot. And, the first thing that came along was The Bachelor, and I was completely honored. I was like, wow, like they think I'm beautiful. They want me on television, and I have this opportunity to like meet a cool guy. And, you know, so I went on the show, and at that time I wasn't ready to, you know, do my big reveal. And, it was more of a confidence booster for me. And I remember worrying about, how my face would look, and they have like the best cameras. You know, you see people on TV on the show, and they all look amazing and flawless. Right. I was so worried about it. Like, okay, is my skin going to show? Is it going to poke through? Are people going to know? And, you know, I had a great experience, and, I wasn't ready at that time to share that. And my photo went viral. That was January when it aired, and I had posted an Instagram selfie that went viral on the internet, and that was over the summer.
July.
And Discovery Channel actually found me. So here's the thing I tell people, it's like you never know what one thing can do, what your voice can mean. I mean, that could be just change your life, and it did for me. Like Discovery Channel saw that photo and approached me about doing the documentary. I got that TV show, and then, you know, I was doing interviews with the Today Show and People Magazine and Teen Vogue and Dr. Phil, and it was just by just that one picture and being vulnerable, which being vulnerable doesn't mean that you're not a strong person. I think that's a sign of strength, and being vulnerable and
absolutely
sharing my story,
sure.
Just that one thing, it made a dramatic impact on my life and really changed my life, and gave me a type of confidence that I've never had before, and helped so many people. So, yeah, it's been a crazy last year.
It certainly has. Hey, I want to go back to The Bachelor for a moment, because I find it interesting that you were very, very, I guess, growing tiresome of trying to strive for perfection in the world of modeling. But then you decided to go for, I mean, the biggest platform besides cinema is television. And certainly mm-hmm. reality, the ratings of that show are very, very high. What made you change your mind to go on and certainly from what I can tell, I really don't know the show that well, so pardon me, but
yeah.
it seems like, you know, you're thrust in this house with a bunch of other women and for,
yeah.
I don't know how long you were on the show, but it seems like you wouldn't have had much privacy. And how did that coincide with your secret?
I wasn't on the show for very long. I actually got sent home the first night.
Are you kidding me?
I did.
What an ass that bachelor was.
But
it worked out for you then. Saved you a lot of energy.
Yeah, but it's, you know, for me, like I said, it was a confidence booster. I was like, I can do this. And it was really getting outside of my comfort zone. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's going to be all these beautiful women and, you know, made up and perfect. And I was hiding the secret. And, you know, I knew that in the back of my head too. I knew like people are probably going to find out depending on how far I make it in the show. But, nobody really knew about it even after that. It wasn't until I came forward with it. And, you know, I'm still friends with many of the people and on the show. And they're like, I had no idea, you know, that that you were hiding that. And, you know, you look so beautiful when we met you on the show. And, you know, it's just a lot of people were surprised because I had to put on all this makeup just to look like I had the appearance of normal skin, but no one knew that I was hiding the secret. So, but yeah, for me, I went on the show because it was really a confidence booster and I didn't know what the outcome was going to be and thought maybe, people would find out about it. But, I think everything worked out perfect for me.
It certainly has. And I can just imagine if it took a turn this way. If, for example, if you were, you know, on there for a couple of days, weeks, whatever, and one of the producers walked into your room and saw you without makeup. And then convinced you, or you said, okay, I've had enough, you know, I'm out of the closet. Here it is. This is me, Breanne Rice. This is who I am. This is what I look like. And tonight when we go for our, what do you call it? I don't know, supper meeting or whatever, dinner meeting, I'm going to walk out there without my makeup. The producers probably would have clamored over that. They would have loved it because it would have been a ratings mecca. You know, they would have.
Yeah.
And, of course, the bachelor would have been like, oh, you're such a beautiful person inside, but you're going to have to go. You're just not my type, but I'm sure you're so beautiful inside. But it would have been interesting. But who cares about that? I'm just kind of, you know, because that's the world we live in because of how, you know, working in media and ratings, et cetera, and how the producers' minds work. And I'm sure that's how the executives would have thought as well. So take us to Too Ugly for Love, because when we spoke prior to today, the Discovery Channel show, Too Ugly for Love. I mean, just the name itself is so off-putting. And here you are on a reality show. And I get it, but explain to our listeners why you would be on such a show with that title.
Yeah, so let's just throw this out there, too. There's a question mark at the end of the statement. So
true.
It's a question. But,
doesn't work in radio.
right. But when I did it, I was like, really? That's the title? Because, you know, they approached me and they're like, hey, we're doing this show. And I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. By the way, the show's called Too Ugly for Love. And I'm like, okay.
Gulp.
All right. Gulp. So essentially, it's a very heartwarming show. It's about people who have conditions that they hide from people. So mine was my vitiligo. And it was a production team that filmed it from the UK. They flew out here and they filmed me in Seattle for 2 months and followed me around my everyday life and putting on makeup. They even set me up on some dates. And it's like, okay, when do I tell the guy? Do I, you know, just throw it at him on the first date and say, hey, boom, this is me. Take it or leave it. Do I?
So let me interrupt you here for a second, Breanne, because so now you're on this date with cameras. So why does the date think you're being filmed?
So they didn't tell them that I had the condition.
Sure.
The producers. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, you're going to go on this date with this girl. Like, we're going to film you. It's for a documentary, blah, blah, blah. And the guys were like, okay. They set me up on three dates, three different guys. And, you know, I did tell a couple of them about it. And I met with my best friend, too. And she's like, you can't do that. You can't just throw it out there the first date. But, so they were kind of like shocked, you know, when I told them about it, and they kind of they were like, some of them didn't know how to respond, you know, because you're being filmed. And sometimes you say what you think you want people to hear because you know you're being filmed, you know.
Sure.
But it was just a documentary about people that hide conditions from other people, what their everyday life
various
is.
Various conditions, correct?
Yes, and autoimmune thing. There was a beautiful gal that had alopecia, and so she actually had to wear a wig. And then another man who had lost one of his legs. And it just follows you. And what is it like to walk in their shoes, you know? And for me, I was able to share what I dealt with vitiligo and navigating through even the dating world and my workouts. We filmed at one of my favorite Pilates studios, and I came with a full face of makeup, and I talked about, oh, my gosh, am I going to sweat this off? And, you know, my skin's going to look bad, and can't waterproof your makeup to your face. So it was a great experience. And it aired internationally on various Discovery Networks, TLC, UK. It was translated into many different languages. I always think it's done airing. And then I got a message from a gal yesterday that was airing in Colombia right now. So it's just been going all over the world, and it hasn't come to the US yet. There's a chance it might come here. So
well, hopefully you're still getting residual checks. That's all that matters, right?
Right.
All right. So listen, take us to the big day. July 2016. You woke up one morning, you said, this is it. Everyone's going to find out who the real Breanne Rice is. Take it away, Breanne.
Yeah, I posted that photo on Instagram. I remember thinking, should I post this? Shouldn't I? Go back and forth. And I was like, boom, click.
Was it actually taken the day of?
Yes, it was. And once you put it out there on the internet, it's out there forever, right?
So I want you to paint the picture. Were you alone? Were you with your parents? Did you really think about this? Were you just impromptu? Or was your finger hovering over the button for a while and you're like, F it, and you just hit it?
I did. I said, F it. I posted it. My finger was hovering over the button. And I said, I just knew that I had to. Like, I just knew. And it was really that moment where things shifted in my life. And I said, you know, I'd always posted photos and quotes and things like that. And like, here's me looking cute. Here's my food. Like, you know, the typical Instagram photos. And I was like, nope, I have to post this. And I thought about it. I thought about what I was going to say. Like, how do I write this? I wanted it to be powerful, and I posted it, and then it went viral. And it was probably the best thing that I've ever done.
So that's the ultimate or equivalent to standing on top of the biggest mountain in the world with a bullhorn and screaming, here it is, here's who I am. So now I imagine it wasn't easy to just put the phone down and be like, okay, let's see what's on TV. So what were you doing? Just glued to your digital device all day long and finding out, wow, oh my God, look at this outpouring of love and support.
Absolutely. I think my phone was permanently plugged into the charger in the wall for the next month because it was dying every 5 minutes. I was glued to my phone, and I'm a words of affirmation person. So, receiving all the love and support, and I didn't have anybody tearing me down. I was shocked because you never know with stuff like that. I mean, that was a very, it was a raw photo. There was no editing or anything. It was like, boom, right? Showing my vitiligo, no makeup. And I was expecting to get mixed opinions or people saying hurtful things. You never know. Hiding behind a keyboard, right? It's a reality that we live in. And I didn't get any of that. It was all love and support. And the next day I was on the phone with reporters from New York and Today Show and everything. And I don't think I slept for a month. but it was amazing, and it changed my life. It changed my world. And
yeah, Breanne,
I'm so glad that I did it.
Talk about how liberating it was. Even before you got any responses, when you hit that button, was it like the weight of the world was just instantly removed from your shoulders? And then, of course, the responses and the comments start trickling in. And I mean, and when did you open that front door and just go like, hello, world, here I am?
It was after I posted it. I felt like there was a huge weight lifted off of me. And it was like, for me, that was a way for me to say, I'm letting go of this. I'm letting go of these mindsets. I'm letting go of the thoughts that say that I'm not good enough. And I'm posting this so that other women and other people know that I've been hiding this, and I'm being vulnerable and saying, you can wake up and feel confident and comfortable in your own skin. This is my story. Let this inspire you, no matter what you're going through, no matter what circumstance, no matter what insecurity you have, let it go. Be you. Love yourself in the way that you're uniquely and individually made. And that was just like, boom, I'm letting this go.
Now, you know that, I know that, and a lot of listeners appreciate and understand that. But let's talk about the unfortunate reality of sometimes, and maybe this hasn't happened. We only have a minute or two left, but I want you to talk about the person who's come up to you and said something very, very far from sensitive.
I've been fortunate that I haven't gotten too much of that online, but I do get it.
Or I'm talking about in public, stares,
in public
comments.
You know, there was one time where I went into a local coffee place and a person approached me. I had sunglasses on. This was before I had come out with everything. And there's actually a big chunk of pigment missing on my chin. And someone said to me, they go, you smeared your foundation all over your chin. Like, you messed it up. You might want to look and fix that. And I grabbed my tea and I started crying, you know, because it hurt my feelings, and I didn't want to say, hey, jerk, I have an autoimmune disease, you know?
Yeah, well, actually, that's not as bad as I thought it could be, because obviously they were unaware of that. And I guess if you can take the perspective as one woman trying to look out for another woman, thinking she just had a bad running out the door, needed her coffee more than looking in the mirror and making sure her foundation was correct type of day. Yeah. But, well, I'm sure there's going to be instances, but, you know, you are a very, very strong, courageous, and driven person. And I thank you for putting out your vitiligo for the world to see. And whatever condition, you know, we all have conditions, whether they're real or perceived, that we have to cope with. And change doesn't come easy in life. I mean, it takes the Ronald Reagans in life with Alzheimer's and countless other people, the Michael J. Foxes to come out with his condition, and you name it. And just the little part that I do, get up on stage and being a male with mental illness or drug and alcohol issues or a visual impairment, you know, you name it. That's what we need to do. But say, hey, listen, here's who we are. The world is far from perfect, and as individuals, we are far from perfect.
Absolutely.
Well, you keep rocking it, my girl, and you keep modeling.
Thanks,
because I love what you're doing. You're a speaker as well, and the fact that Dr. Phil and all these other programs have picked you up, it's great to see, because not only do people get to see who you are, but they get to hear who you are, and the fact that you're such a loving and passionate person who embraces life and your new profession that really helps people with their digestive tract issues and a full-fledged aspect of being healthy is great. And your website for that is?
It's BreannesHolisticHealth.com.
BreannesHolisticHealth.com. Breanne Rice, thank you so much for your time. And again, hats off to you for being just the brave, trailblazing person that you are.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
All the best to you. So, what do you think? Pretty brave, huh? Yes, absolutely. And that's what I like to highlight here. People who are just really trailblazers in overcoming adversity, because that's what it's about. We all have these things that happen in life that we have no control over. Yes, we do. And that is it for me. I don't want to go, but it's the first full day of summer, so let's all go outside and indulge, right? If you like me to speak at your school, college, corporation, camp, or anything else you can think of, check me out at markfarrellmotivation.com. And thanks, as always, to Kelsey and Jesse. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day!